We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ. Oh, my goodness! Stunning with the left hand! Devontae deep! Oh, my goodness! I don't believe it! A 30-footer on the ground!
Just stop it already!
All right, guys. Welcome into BuzzBeat, a Charlotte Hornets podcast. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by Brian and Lee today here live on the Green Room app. Brian, welcome back from Denver. We missed you.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. Glad to be back. A little sad to have vacation over with, but it is one of those vacations I've come back energized. You know, sometimes you come back from vacation, I feel like you're just like, you know, it's like on a Sunday, you got to go to work the next day, and that's no fun. But no, I've come back with a little pep in my step, and ready to talk some Hornets with you guys.
And you were probably out in Denver thinking, okay, I got no cell service. The Hornets are not making moves. Maybe that's just because I'm not receiving any updates. But no, they have not really made any moves. So that's how that works.
No, I got to say, there were multiple people when the BuzzBeat Slack channel was, which has just continued to just go nuts for weeks, months now. I don't really know. But there was one point, one of my friends was like, what the hell? Why is your phone, like, we were at dinner, you know, a meal or whatever. And they're like, why is your phone, you know, vibrating so much? I was like, you know, people want to know if Rashawn Holmes is going to sign with the Hornets. You know, you just like, I mean, you guys get this. You just like can't explain this sickness to like 95% of the people in your life. They just don't know. They're like, who is Rashawn Holmes? Is that a real person? And why do the Hornets and their fans want him so badly? And you're like, well, I don't really have the time to explain it to you. But no, glad to be back. Left the day after the draft, which was a week ago. So here we are.
How's it going with you, Lee?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Good to have BG back. I will say, every time I hear the intro, I miss Eric and Dell just a little bit, you know? That always gets me a little riled up. So I'm glad BG's re-energized. And we've got some stuff to banter about, that's for sure.
Well, speaking of the intro, I might have to take off Devontae's part.
Oh, man.
Ooh, good point.
Ouch. Yeah. That hurts, dude. So.
I will adjust that sooner rather than later. I don't know. Whenever I have time. But anyway, if you're listening to this on the podcast version, depending on when you're listening to it, these deals that we're talking about will probably become final. I guess if you're listening after 12:01 p.m. Eastern time, teams can officially sign these free agent as the moratorium is lifted. Now, let's first start with the departures, and then we'll get to the supposed interest and Lauri Markkanen and the addition of Ish Smith. So for Devontae Graham, he was dealt to New Orleans in a sign and trade, 4 years, $47 million, which is an average of about $12 million, a little bit under that. In return, Charlotte did get a lottery protected first round pick, which was great. You know, I don't know how long that is protected out, but we do know in 2022 it's protected for the lottery. I think the thing here is, like, what was the plan going into free agency with Devontae Graham? Like, were they trying to bring him back? Like, was that the plan? Or were they trying to force a sign and trade? Like, or maybe there was, like, a magic number that they just didn't want to exceed. Like, that's I don't know exactly what they were trying to do with Graham. Do you guys have any thoughts?
I figured similarly, like there was some type of magic number, like you said, Richie. And I mean, I don't know what it was. It's certainly less than probably 12 a year. Because Devontae is such a quality backup. And he's a guy they drafted. He really carried the offense 2 years ago. And then was still, even with some struggles and LaMelo in town, like last year, a hugely important offensive player for them. And like one of the ultimate like good vibes guys and leaders on the team, despite the fact that he was younger. You tend to want to hold on to those guys, right? And I realized that like the arrival of LaMelo really does limit Devontae to, at least on paper, being a backup. I think that sort of like narrow casts a little bit what his role is, because this is a guy that would still play big minutes and take big shots and would play next to LaMelo, would still close out plenty of games and stuff. So it's one thing to say like, oh, he's a good backup. It's another thing to sort of like elaborate and really get into like what his role would look like. But in my head, even after they drafted Book Knight, I assumed that meant the end of Monk. But I figured Devontae's still around, and I was already in my head thinking of different ways that you could really leverage the pull-up, the deep three-point gravity of Devontae Graham and use James Booknight, who's such a good cutter, a good mover of the basketball, to play into that space created by Devontae. So, like, I figured he was coming back kind of regardless of what the number was. I was sort of hoping more in, like, as I said to you guys, the Monte Morris, you know, 28 over 3 years range. So you're thinking nine and a half, somewhere in there. There were some projections where it's, you know, he was, I think Hollinger's formula had him as like a, you know, 15, 16 million a year player. And he sort of ended up landing somewhere in between those two. Happy to see Devontae get paid, but I'm a little bummed that it's not in Charlotte. They at least didn't lose him for nothing. You know, they did retain a first round pick. Or they got a first-round pick back, albeit protected, like you mentioned, Richie. But I just don't see, like, Devontae's heading into the prime of his career, and he is, despite the fact that he's not a rim finisher, he doesn't get to the rim, because of his pick-and-roll pull-up gravity and because of his shooting off the catch and off the dribble. Like, truly one of the true, like, long-range bombers in the league from 28 to 30 feet. Off the catch. On big volume and off the dribble and off the catch. Like, yeah. He was one of the true high volume pick and roll players in the league 2 years ago. In this past season, he was, I think, second in the league in spot up efficiency, again, on tons of volume. So it's hard to replace that kind of like 3-point shooting and passing. It's not easy. So, I assume there was some type of number, and maybe Charlotte was really playing a bit of hardball, yeah, thinking that the, you know, like he's only going to be the backup. Although again, I do think just labeling him only as a backup, you know, makes it feel like, oh, he's strictly a second unit change of pace guy. And it's like, no, like he's a little more than that. Like he's a real rotation piece and a guy that could play leverage minutes for you. So, but yeah, I don't know. Lee and Richie, what do you guys think about Devontae and sort of like the plan they had for a free agency?
Yeah. I mean, it is a little confusing. I mean, I've been of the opinion going into this offseason that I would have liked them to retain both assets. And by that, I mean Monk and Graham.
Same.
I've also kind of been of the opinion that long term, you probably can't exist on this roster with all three of the smaller guards we have. And obviously, that includes Rozier. Now, Rozier's the only one back, and he's on an expiring contract. I do think that New Orleans probably slightly overpaid for Graham's services, particularly considering the fact that they lost Lonzo Ball. And Devontae Graham, Brian, you laid it out really well. He's a long-range bomber off the dribble and off the catch. He's a solid offensive connector and passer and playmaker, but he doesn't score at the rim, he doesn't score in the mid-range, and he really doesn't defend at a very high level. And New Orleans was just a complete sieve on defense last year. So they trade out a defensive point of attack guard for Devontae Graham, who I love to death, but does not really bring much in that department. So I'm kind of in this strange mix of emotions where I feel like he would have been a much better fit on our roster, mm-hmm, being retained than he is in New Orleans, but I'm happy for him. He got a big deal. He deserves a big deal.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll get into kind of later in the episode about kind of the void that these two guards leave on our roster.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, like I was saying earlier, like I think there was a magic number that they would have been happy with bringing Devontae back. And I think this number here that New Orleans offered was just too much for them to consider. But, yeah, the void is huge at the point guard position. And I think, you know, it would have been okay to, like, slightly overpay Graham, even if he is coming off the bench, because he would have been more than willing to come off the bench. Like, that's how he was. Like, yeah. he's a locker room guy. Like, you know, despite all of his flaws on the offensive side of the court, inside the arc, despite some of the flaws on the defensive side, being undersized, and you can only do so much with that, even though some of the advanced numbers did say that he performed well on that end, you're going to miss Graham's personality and just kind of his presence inside the locker room. I think that sometimes that stuff goes understated.
Well, and Richie, just like a homegrown development talent.
Yeah.
Like that always hurts, you know?
These kind of things, like they moved around in the 2018 draft to get that pick, to draft Devontae. These are the kind of things that, like, front offices, like, fucking pride themselves on and hang their hat on. Yep. And you don't just let that walk out, you know, it is a bummer to see Malik Monk walk for nothing. That's not a huge surprise because it seemed to be trending in that direction for a little bit. As much as I don't like that, that seemed to be where things were going. Devontae, it is a little bit of a surprise. It's kind of interesting, too, because they could have – I think if either of you brought Devontae back at $12 million a year, even if you thought that was like an overpay – which, like, debatable, maybe a little bit. Yep. But I think actually, you know what? No, I agree with what you guys said. Like, probably a little bit of an overpay. I think you can say that. But I still think that would be a tradable asset. Like, it's not a disastrous contract. But I guess the thought would be, well, when's this trade value going to be maxed out on right now? You know what I mean? And so if you thought, well, we could bring this guy back. It's at a number we're not comfortable with, but we could use it as a trade chip at some point in time. But right now we have the ability to use this to get a first round pick. All right, well we're just going to pull that lever right now. But it's crazy to go back, you know, 8 or 9 months ago and be like, yeah, there's no Devontae Graham going to be on the roster going forward. He's a Pelican now. Just like you would not. I know stuff moves quickly in this league, but like that one is like a little surprising. And Richie, I got to say, there were a couple months ago, you, Spencer, and I did like multiple hypotheticals of like which of the three, if you could pick two of Rozier, Monk, and Graham, who would you rather have? And I know I picked Devontae and Malik Monk. And now they're both gone, and Terry Rozier is the last one standing. Yeah. So, oh well.
I kind of view Monk a little bit better of a player, more well-rounded than Graham, just slightly. But I think with the way that Monk's kind of experience here in Charlotte has turned out, I kind of resigned to the fact that he wasn't coming back, regardless of, like, you know, our interest, his interest. It just didn't feel like he was coming back, and he signed the veteran minimum with the Lakers.
Yeah. I hope it works out. I really do. And I agree with you on Monk, too. Like, because of his defense and his ability to pressure the rim, I like his two-way game more, but Graham is probably better in this one skill, which is like the deep pull-up shooting. And that's the one of the two most important. It's like that and advantage creation. Those are like the two most important like half-court offensive skills. Graham has one at a pretty like high level, and that's just like probably why he has more value league-wide than someone like Monk. I hope it works out for him in LA. I don't really love the fit though either.
Well, they've got some depth with Westbrook coming in, Wayne Ellington, THT, I think Ariza signed there. It's funny you mentioned his defense on the Twitter timeline the other day. I saw someone arguing
discourse.
Yeah. I mean,
there was Monk defense discourse. It
was
awesome.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Okay, let me put it this way. He's average. He's adequate. But to say that there isn't going to be a drop off between Caruso and Monk, you're kidding yourself. You're kidding yourself. Like, Caruso is one of the better, you know, perimeter defenders out there. And I think, you know, Chicago is getting a good one there. So any thoughts about Monk? I just don't really have, you know, too many takes on him.
I will say this. It's going to be painful if the reality comes to be true that Malik Monk wins a title as like the offensive linchpin of the second unit of a LeBron AD Westbrook led team. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen, but I can absolutely envision a world in which it does. I still think Malik Monk has a lot of value. in this league. He's, as we've joked about a million times in this podcast, he's still incredibly young, and he has made strides in his past two seasons. And albeit it hasn't been on a consistent basis, and he's going to have to put it all together, I like it from Malik. I think bet on yourself, try and have some big moments in the playoffs with a marquee team, and see where your career goes from there. I'm going to miss him, particularly. There was always kind of this feeling this past season with the Hornets where if the starters start slow, and they did a lot of times, Bridges and Monk off the bench was like kind of this ace in the hole that you had to just completely come in, disrupt the game flow, get up and down, offensive punch, and they changed multiple games in a positive way this season. And I'm, you know, again, we'll probably get into it a little bit more later, but I just don't necessarily see where that comes from this year with Malik Monk and Devontae Graham.
Yeah, agreed. Again, Malik Monk won't turn 24 until February. Got to remember that. I mean, 4 years in the NBA, he's still just like 23 and a half years old. It, like, he could still be getting better. The last 2 years, he has gotten better. I've actually gone back and rewatched a couple of Hornets games from this past season recently, the last couple of weeks. They've mostly been from, like, the period of the season before the injuries and, like, after Malik got into the rotation.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah, and he had some games that were just incredible. And it wasn't just the games where it was like, oh, it's Miami, and now Malik's breathing fire and just throwing in every three he takes, where it was like meaningful playmaking, meaningful half-court playmaking, the game-winning drive that he hit against Sacramento where he gets the and one plus the finish, some of the big-time shots he made. And again, the defense, yeah, I agree, he's not Caruso. Caruso's a very good point of attack on ball defender. Monk has gotten a lot better, but he's not Caruso. But just, you know, some of the rim protection he gave you, the help rotations, some games where he had two steals, two blocks, plus 3-point shooting. It was just like, plus the rim pressure, he was just putting it all together in a way. And I thought it was pretty impressive too. There are so many, you know, actions and after timeout calls that the Hornets make where, yeah, James Rego would dial up plenty of stuff for Malik Monk, but there was also a lot of stuff that he would call up out of a timeout where it was contingent on Malik to catch the ball, get from A to B, and then make a pass, right? And so I thought he was phenomenal at doing that type of stuff, being like, all right, I got to come across these two Iverson screens, catch, turn the corner, look baseline, and then make this 20-foot, you know, 30-foot pass to Rozier, who's coming off a flare in the corner, and, like, he just constantly hit his marks there. Like, he's ready to be a part of a system, but he's got plenty of, like, skill and freelance ability and craft and the, you know, obviously the explosiveness around the rim. I'll just never stop, like, buying this guy's talent. Like, I think it's real. I think it matters. I don't know if it'll work in LA. So we might be having this conversation again a year from now being like, well, hopefully it works in Dallas or, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's a bummer because I think he fit LaMelo really well. I think Charlotte will miss his movement shooting. I think they'll miss his playmaking. I think they'll miss the fit next to LaMelo. And yeah, seeing a former lottery pick that was playing pretty well the last two seasons walk out the door for nothing. It does sting a little bit.
Yeah.
But to be clear, like, I agree with everything you guys said. And Lee, you just mentioned this, like, I'm happy Malik's betting on himself. I will root for him. I want it to go well. And it would be pretty cool to see, like, you know, Devontae play with Zion and Malik Monk play with LeBron. It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around those things. But I hope it goes well. And the Lakers are going to need his shooting, too, because obviously they've had plenty of guys sort of, you know, they've had to pass up on Kuzma and KCP to get Westbrook. And I know they've brought in Ellington and Melo, but – you know, you could see Monk being a factor for them this year. You could. So best of luck. But it does sting a little bit because I just don't think, like, it's hard to go from Graham and Monk as your bench guards to rookie James Bouknight, who I like, but a rookie that doesn't have the passing craft that those guys do in Ish Smith. So that's a little tough. Yes. And this, not to just totally go down another tangent because we should stick with whatever we had sort of planned out, but, like, it is very obvious this team, they are putting so much on LaMelo Ball's plate. Like, right. it is, like, he is going to be You know, I think Ishmith is a solid backup. If Gordon Hayward's healthy, he will help. Miles Bridges has made strides as a creative brothers. Richie, you did a video on this not too long ago. We've talked about it a lot on here. I've tweeted plenty of videos about it. It is, they are going to be so dependent on LaMelo for creation next season, for advantage creation, for link up play. I think he's up for it. He's incredible, but he's also 20 years old, and he needs to get stronger. I don't know. I'm looking around wondering like where the secondary creators are that isn't, you know, Ish Smith and you know, I guess Rozier. There's and obviously Hayward, but
the burden's going to be heavier, right? Like,
there's no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, with the mixing and matching of lineups that JB loves to do, obviously that flexibility has gone down with the departures of these two guards here. So you mentioned Ish Smith, so let's go ahead and transition to that. So the potential signings here of Ish Smith and the rumor about Lauri Markkanen, and we'll go ahead and get into that. So Ish Smith here is going to be potentially signed with the room mid-level exception at $4.5 million. So let's talk about him as the player, and then we'll kind of talk about, you know, what he can do for this team and kind of what you were just talking about, Brian, in terms of how much of a drop off is this guy from, you know, Malik Monk and Devontae Graham. I think Ish Smith, obviously, he's been around the league. He's played for what, like 12 teams or something like that in his career, which is ridiculous. Biggest assets is the fact that he's quick, he's shifty, he's a good playmaker, he gets good looks for his teammates. He can drive and kick. I think one thing that Borrego may or may not like about him is the fact that he loves to live in the mid-range. He shoots a lot of shots from there. He has shown improvement from behind the arc, but I don't know if I truly buy that. Like, I'm not sure I can really buy that, considering over the course of his career, he hasn't been the greatest from there. And I think if you look at his free throw shooting percentage, it's not that great either. And then defensively, he's just undersized. Like, he's not going to be great. He's not going to really be that good either. But, you know, I trust him enough to not be completely, you know, falling off on that end. He's a veteran presence, which the Hornets desperately need, well, you know, with Cody Zeller leaving and stuff like that. So any thoughts, Lee, on Ish Smith, the player?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, this is Central Cabarrus alum legend and Wake Forest legend Ish Smith. Right. So, I mean, a guy who I honestly grew up like idolizing as a high school basketball player. He was just incredible. I mean, you think he's fast now, you know, you should have seen him, 10 years ago. The guy was just a complete and utter blur on the court.
You didn't idolize Michael Jordan. You idolized Ish Smith.
Ish Smith. So look, you're right, Richie. I mean, he fills a desperate need after the void of Devontae Graham and Malik Monk. He's a low volume 3-point shooter, even though he has improved slightly throughout his career as a 3-point shooter. We're talking 2 to 3 attempts per game max, where Devontae Graham, you know, he was getting them up at a much higher volume and on a higher percentage rate. So he doesn't necessarily fill any of the shooting, you know, void. He is a solid veteran seasoned defender, but like you said, he's just limited in the fact that he's a size. So he's like a very professional backup point guard. He will be a viable option. I think he's certainly a better like wiggle on the ball playmaker than a guy like Brad Wanamaker was last year. Mm-hmm. Obviously he gives up size to a guy like Wanamaker, but this team is going to need guys who can ISO create for others and just put the ball on the floor and create advantage. And I think Ish can do that to a degree. So he's going to play. He's going to be dependent on. You guys just hit on the massive load that is going to be on LaMelo Ball as a kind of playmaking engine. So at least there's a little bit of relief there as a reserve guard for Ish Smith. I've always been a huge fan, but, you know, He's a stopgap. He's not right. Moving the needle. And I think that's kind of the best way I can put it.
Yeah. This is so like I'm having flashbacks to like a couple different things, but I'll start off first by like flashbacks to like Buzz Beats in like 2017, 2018 being like, you know, God dang, could this team just get a cornerstone backup, franchise cornerstone backup point guard? So it wasn't this like piecemeal behind Kemba. Of 1 year from Sessions and Brian Roberts. Obviously, Lynn was awesome, but you couldn't retain him. The Michael Carter Williams, just like so many failed experiments that didn't work out. And then, you know, then you get someone like Devontae, and then, you know, it's tough to see him leave. But I do think Smith, like as far as a stopgap goes, not a bad option to have, like having someone who can north-south create. Right. Lee, you mentioned his speed. This is one of those things, like I remember I grew up insanely big Wake Forest fan.
Yep.
I can think about reading on like the scout.com Wake message boards in like 2005, 2006, being like people talking about how Ish Smith, he could go up and down the court in like 4 dribbles, right? Because he was so fast. Like I can still remember that.
And he's a big time recruit.
Yeah. 2006 class, after Wake struck out on Mike Conley and Javaris Crittenden and Ty Lawson, they got Ish Smith. But yeah, the same. It's funny because like these conversations that we had about Ish Smith when I was like in high school, whatever, we're having them now where it's like he's really, really fast. He kind of can't shoot that well though, which is like his thing at Wake Forest too. But I also think the other thing I was thinking about with Ish, and I've been thinking about this in relation to LaMelo, and I think Ish clicks into it as well, which is what I think is going, what is happening already in Charlotte is 2 seasons ago, you have a team that finishes last in the NBA in pace. They finished last in the NBA in average time of possession per possession length, seconds per possession. On offense, a rank last in the NBA, 30th in the NBA in seconds per possession after an opponent made field goal. They're a methodical, walk the ball up the court, spread pick and roll offense with Devontae Graham, you know, yep. And Terry Rozier. And that's really how they worked it. And then LaMelo comes and they run most of the same stuff in the half court, but they want to get up and down way, way, way more. And it's not just the hit-ahead bombs from LaMelo, which, yes, he does those a lot, and they're incredible. Like, some, they're just basketball, just bliss, joy, like whatever you want to call it. But it is also how LaMelo wants to generate turnovers, wants to get into these chaos situations, and he's so good. He's, like, uniquely good at when everything is moving around at 100 miles per hour. LaMelo is so good at grabbing the ball and finding the right guy with it. Like he is a genius in that regard. And this is a team that also, when LaMelo was on the court last season, was a full second faster in terms of average possession length on offense. 13.9 with him on, 14.9 with him off. And I think you bring in a guy like Ish, and the plan is obviously like pedal to the metal in Charlotte. Look who they drafted. They went out and got athletes and play finishers. And then your one signing so far in free agency is Ish Smith. And you know, one of the guys who leaves is Devontae, who was like a good transition passer, but not really like a transition finisher, or like an engine of pace or whatever. And so, yeah, I just think they're really going to lean in on, we are going to force turnovers, and we're going to play fast as hell. Like, and it's going to be LaMelo and the toy box that's just filled with athletes, right? And just guys that want to get up and down and run and finish. You know, I'm intrigued by that. Certainly, it sounds fun, but how does it all culminate? How does it develop? What's the health of Hayward long term? Like, there's a lot of stuff to consider here, but it does seem like we're seeing a little bit more of, all right, we've got to get some track stars around LaMelo. And even when he's out, you know, you're going to have a point guard that's going to want to also push the pace too, like Ish.
Yeah, that's just quickly, just to react to that, that's a really good point, Brian. Like, look, there are still tons of questions about this team from a roster construction standpoint. But I think the way you just framed it there, you can actually kind of follow a little bit more of a logical roadmap that they took this offseason than maybe before with that kind of framing in mind. So I actually really like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he fits the system perfectly in terms of just being that quick guy that can get up and down the court. But I don't know if this was technically part of their plan, because one domino led to another, which led to them, you know. But
yeah.
So if the Hornets do sign Ish Smith with the room exception, they are going to want to sign someone else to fill up that cap space. And there's a rumor that was out there today. Today is Thursday as we're recording this. If you're listening to this on the podcast version yesterday, as Lauri Markkanen potentially could be signing an offer sheet here in Charlotte. Now, Markkanen with the Bulls has a qualifying offer of $9 million. He has a cap hold of $20 million on Chicago's sheet right now. And I know that the Bulls cap situation is getting up there. The NBA luxury tax is $136 million. I don't know Chicago's situation like to a T, but I know that they're getting up there with some of those acquisitions that they're about to make. So if Charlotte were to sign Markkanen, first off, it has to be for at least two seasons if it's an offer sheet. And I do think there is a situation in which Charlotte has some leverage here in terms of finding that perfect number to offer him. Because knowing what they know about Charlotte's situation, and you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but I know they're pushing close, or could push close to the luxury tax. Now, I wouldn't give in if I was Charlotte in terms of Chicago saying, hey, you know, we really want to match your offer sheet, but let's just do a sign and trade. I would hope that they wouldn't give in to that and just, you know, okay, you can match Chicago. You can match. I'll call your bluff. But in terms of just marketing the player, like, this is not the guy that I thought Charlotte should go after. First off, they have drafted two players that are basically very similar in terms of the position that they play, the things that they can do. Kai Jones, JT Thor. Can you imagine Markkanen and PJ Washington? All these players that toggle between like the four and the five position. It just feels weird how they're constructing the different positions of this roster. And Markkanen is definitely going to give you some offense, right? Like, he's going to improve with the spacing and his movement and his off-green stuff, but I'm just not sold he makes this team as a whole better, because he's not filling any gaps for Charlotte. He really isn't, to me.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Richie. I mean, here's the thing. Like, what is this team trying to accomplish this year? And I think all indicators point, even with a kind of a strange offseason, I feel like there's still an expectation in Charlotte from the coaching staff and from ownership and even from the fan base that, you know, playoffs. Like, I think it's going to be a challenge, but I don't think it's unrealistic. Does signing Lauri Markkanen help you achieve that goal? Maybe from an optimistic, if you look at it from an optimistic standpoint, maybe it does. Personally, I don't feel that it does. For all the reasons you just laid out, Richie, we're already really heavy in kind of his like 4 or 5 quasi position. PJ Washington and Miles Bridges both somewhat quietly shot the ball in the high 30s from the three last year. So it's not even like Laurie brings this massive upgrade at the hybrid 4 or 5 to shooting. Like PJ and Miles shoot the ball, frankly, just as well. And they do a hell of a lot more in the ancillary parts of their game apart from just the shooting. So, you know, he's a young player that has had some moments in Chicago. He's also had, what, 4 different coaches since he's been with the Bulls?
So and, like, one of them was Jim Boylan, too.
Right. So like, I'm not saying this guy was given the best opportunity to present his best self as a basketball player. It just makes no sense to me from a roster construction fill a need standpoint. You know, if we do it, I'm not exactly going to be like up in arms or anything, kind of depending on what the number is.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I don't think it improves this roster on the whole.
Yeah, just a couple things. Like, for one, if not for the presence of Gordon Hayward on this roster – it would look like Charlotte's in a rebuild right now. Like the team is so young. They're really like only kind of built to win right now. And that's a lot of that is contingent on like a 20-year-old LaMelo Ball basically playing at like, you know, like an all-star level next season, which I guess he was kind of close to this year or whatever, but it just, you're putting so much into, hoping that guys like PJ and Miles and LaMelo really make these big leaps and that Hayward could play 70 games or whatever. And I mean, I guess, you know, I will need to see all of the information with the contract, what the years are, possible options, team player, the average annual salary, like all of that stuff before I fly over the handlebars here. You know, I want to see all of that stuff. You know, I do think it's kind of interesting. I was going back and forth with Austin Hutchinson mentioned this to me on Twitter earlier of like, I was sort of like, what's the value of bringing a guy in like this? Cause I agree. I don't think this guy really like does anything to drive winning. He's 7 feet tall and he's a great shooter. And I kind of liked him as a prospect coming out of Arizona, but the defense is bad. It's never really gotten better. And he offers very little else offensively, even though maybe there have been some creation flashes. But he offers very little outside of catch and shoot. Now, that's an important thing to have. But I do think we're getting to a point more and more where three-point specialists or 3-and-D guys, like, you know, stretch fours or 3-and-D wings, they've got to give you something. They almost have to be able to give you something else. The ancillary skills that you mentioned, Lee, I'm not sure you can be, especially if you're like a blob, if you're a blob to like bad defender, I don't think you can be just a shooter. Like, I think you've got to be able to have something else. I'm not sure how much like positional flexibility he gives you. Like, Miles and PJ give you a lot. And maybe that's enough because you can just sort of move those guys around. They're super malleable. But like, I don't really think you can play a lot of like basketball with Markkanen as like the 5. I mean, maybe if PJ and Miles are out there too, or McDaniels, so you've got some secondary rim protection in those lineups. But yeah, I just don't see what he does for driving winning. And the other thing too is like, I am here for finding prospects that are in distress and doing a second draft, right? Yep. So I like that as a way to like find value. I think it's a good option. Charlotte really hasn't done it so much, but I do like it as a possibility. You find someone, you're like maybe what the Lakers are doing with Malik Monk, right? Not that I would say he's necessarily a prospect in distress at this point, but I just don't think that type of like buy low risk approach is like giving Lowry marketing like, you know, 3 years, $45 million. Like, that to me is not buying low, you know? You know, like, that's the one where you're like, oh, man, like, I don't even know if this guy, like, is a starter for this team. You're going to pay him that much money, and he's super limited on both sides of the court, even though he has this one very important skill. So I don't know. I'll be curious to see, like, if, in fact, Charlotte hits him with an offer sheet, what the terms of that look like, and I'm guessing Chicago wouldn't match. Maybe they'll just you know, yeah. They'll just do something to get a, you know, a TPE or whatever out of it. But yeah, I just don't, this is not the most Charlotte has right now. What, $13 million in change in cap space.
Right.
They can get up to a little bit more if they lop off one of the Martins or McDaniels, hopefully not McDaniels, but they lop off one of those guys, they can clear out some more space. They lop off two of those guys, they can clear out some more space. This is just not the most creative way of leveraging that cap space you have. That's an asset. And maybe we overrate and overinflate just how valuable it is to have that asset, to have that cap space. But as we saw, that allowed them to do the Mason Plumlee trade and move up 20 picks in the draft and take JT4. So like punting on that, there is real opportunity cost to that, especially if it's for someone like Lauri Markkanen that's not moving the needle so much for you. And yeah, I don't know, man. I don't really know if you sign this guy and it's for multi-years and there isn't – I also worry, too, that this would mean there's some sort of trade in the works, right? And, you know, maybe someone like PJ Washington, you know, you're thinking of Markkanen's going to be the guy, you know, brought in to replace PJ. And it's like PJ is just a better player than him on both sides of the court, in my opinion. So I don't know. It makes me uneasy in a bunch of different ways. But if this doesn't lead to a trade, and if the numbers and years like aren't that bad, then yeah, bringing in a 7-foot guy that can bomb threes, I'm sure LaMelo will get the best out of him. And to Lee's point, he did not have a good situation in Chicago, both from a coaching standpoint and from a creator standpoint around him. Like having, you know, freaking Denzel Valentine and Kobe White be your table setters or whatever. Like Satoransky has been like a godsend for them in recent years as someone that could actually like get open shots for other guys. So, you know, I think there's a chance for him to be better than he has been, but he's already a good catch and shoot player. So like, I don't know, like what else is he going to give you other than that? I don't know. It feels uninspired. And it feels like it's not a dynamic way to use this space that you have. And that's a little disappointing while you're also like waving goodbye to Monk for nothing. And while you're losing Devontae Graham for a protected first round pick.
I want to get to the point that you talked about. If you were to look at this roster, if you were to look at these moves in the offseason, Charlotte looks like a team that's rebuilding, unless you were, you know, focused on the fact that they have Hayward and potentially Terry Rozier. Like overall, top to bottom, these players that the Hornets have acquired this offseason and the players that they have lost, it feels like they're not pushing for the playoffs, which feels like a mistake considering the pressure, you know, the city of Charlotte might have on this team in terms of repeating what they did last year. My hopes for this team, after kind of looking at all the pieces that they lost and the types of players that they drafted, it's not just the players that they drafted, but the types of players like Kai and Thor, like those are developmental pieces. Like, yeah, maybe they might reach this high ceiling a couple seasons down the road, but they have a lot of years to grow into that. And I don't think this team improved. I think the team overall got worse with the departures of Zeller and Graham and Monk. And, you know, we'll put Biombo in there as well if he doesn't come back. I guess we don't really know. But, you know, trading those out for Plumlee and Ish Smith and Booknight, it, you know, again, it feels like they're rebuilding. There's probably about 10 or 11 teams that I can name right now that are better on paper than the Hornets. And obviously, to get in the playoffs, you've got to be in the top 10 to make that play-in tournament. So I just it feels weird the way that last season played out, you know, considering taking into consideration the injuries. They were a top four team at one point in the season, which is crazy to think about. But they're probably more like a, you know, like a 6 or 7 seed if you were to just play out the season. But I guess what I'm getting at is just I don't know what their plan was for this offseason. Like, did it change? Like, how many times do you think it changed? Like, were they going into it with the mindset of, hey, Devontae's coming back, we might pick up somebody else. Oh, now Devontae's gone, let's change our plans completely. Like, I wonder if one domino led to the next and their whole plan just changed.
Like, to your point, Richie, too, even the market and interest is sort of like, oh, we have space and no one really else does. Uh-huh. Well, like, what's the highest draft pick guy that's like still, you know, that's like a free agent that's still around? Oh, marketing? He shot 40% on threes this year. Should we offer him?
Bring him in.
Come on. We gotta do it. He's perfect for us. Yeah, just it. Although I do think now, side note, or maybe this is, maybe I'm going a little bit too off to, like, I'm sort of like looking around the corner too far here, because there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen between now and this moment. But this is a little, this does set up an interesting situation where if Charlotte misses the playoffs next season, right? And right now on paper, I agree with you, Richie. I don't think they're a lock by any stretch to be one of the 8 best teams in, in the Eastern Conference. And we'll see about the play-in and blah, blah, blah. But, like, it would be fascinating to see they stick back in the lottery so that pick does not convey to New York, right, because it's heavily protected. And then let's say New Orleans does make the playoffs in the Western Conference. No guarantee by that. I mean, that's hard to say. It may not happen, but that would give, you know, Charlotte could end up with the fifth pick and the 16th pick, or the ninth pick and the 15th pick, or whatever, which is, like, a little interesting to think about. Especially also, you could consider, like, if things don't go well next season, maybe they look to move Terry Rozier. Maybe you scoop up another first round pick with that. I don't know. I'm looking way too far out in the distance. And I know we want to think about this team having a good season and making the playoffs and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. There's a chance that things could go not great, but they could still walk into the 2022 draft with, like, a lot of power by having several picks in it. So I don't know. That's something to consider, but perhaps that scenario is also unlikely.
If you guys have any questions or comments, please put them in the chat. Or if you have any speaker requests, we'll definitely take somebody up here. That's why we do these podcasts here on Green Room. But as we wrap here, Lee, I will throw it to you for any final points that you have about this offseason and just kind of the direction of this team.
Yeah, so BG, I've already been thinking about that too. Like, it's possible it's possible that the Hornets end up with 2 picks in next year's draft. I guess it's also technically possible they would end up with 0. But
yeah, that's true. Yeah, the other side of the coin, yeah.
I had also, to your point about the way that it feels like this team's in a rebuild, I had also thought about the fact, if the wheels are falling off for some reason early in the season, do they look to move Rozier and just kind of truly embrace the whole rebuild? The one thing I'll say, I think we've fairly been a little bit pessimistic on this episode. I think we've digested and kind of dissected the moves they've made this offseason very rationally. But here's the bullish case, right? So, like, if you're looking at it just completely glass half full, here's the bullish case. The bullish case would be Mason Plumlee, Kai Jones, and PJ Washington is a much better lineup at the 5 than PJ Washington, Cody Zeller, and Bismack Biyombo was. And we all know that we bled points at the center position last year, particularly when it wasn't PJ Washington at the 5. Mm-hmm. Then you go and say, go ahead, you have something, Richie?
I'll say now do that with the point guard position. Go ahead.
right. No, yeah, it's fair. Let me make the bullish case.
Yeah.
The second point would be LaMelo Ball, Miles Bridges, and PJ Washington all make another big jump in their player development.
Yeah.
Particularly, and this is, like, almost blasphemy to say, but I'm just trying to, like, frame it in, like, an art, from, like, a development arc standpoint, LaMelo Ball making a Doncic light type jump in his second year, where he's just unbelievable, heliocentric, offensive engine, and it's just, it all works, right? And then you go and you say, Book Knight is awesome as a rookie, and Gordon Hayward stays healthy the entire season. I know that's a lot of ifs. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying. I think we did a very good and fair job of laying out why this was kind of a confusing and tough offseason. That's the half glass full. If everything goes right and the Hornets somehow end up as a 5 or 6 seed, I think those would be the reasons why it would happen.
We can always count on Lee for some optimism. I love it, Lee. Last point I'll make, I know we're kind of dragging this on here, but, like, one forgotten player, I think, who has been forgotten is Jalen McDaniels. I think with the wing position being so, you know, light with Hayward and Bridges, if you want to call him a wing, Martins, you're going to need someone like Jalen McDaniels to step up. He's a good two-way player, but I think the fact that he's just so low usage, I'm not sure if he's going to make that next step. I mean, right now, like, you can just count on him to be a good cutter, corner shooter, closeout beater guy, but, you know, he's got to be a little bit more than just this hustle guy that scraps and gets offensive rebounds. But he's a guy that I think should or could take a next step that would help this team a lot. So
I just Richard, real quickly, I agree with you. I went on Owen Watterson's podcast recently. We talked a little bit about McDaniels. He was asking me, like, well, what do you think about the wing depth? And I was like, this is before the market and signing. And so I was sort of like looking around at some of the free agents that were still kicking around. And I also thought, well, internally, a guy like McDaniels, who played pretty well in moments last season as an on-ball defender, with some good flashes as a team defender. And I think if he can just shoot it a little bit more from the corners, just like a little bit better, he does so much other good stuff that you want from like a fifth option guy. Richie, you mentioned the cutting. Mm-hmm. So many times he did just an excellent job. I actually think he's one of the best guys in the league at this. At when he's in the weak side corner, short roll happens, he's so good at timing that cut to then be in the dunker spot when the guy in the short roll is looking to make a pass. I mean, PJ hit him for dunks, Miles hit him for dunks, Cody hit him for dunks. And he just does a nice job doing that. And so that type of stuff is good because you at least keep the defense honest. But I do think he needs to get into like from the corners. You know, he's got to be 36-37%. And he does have the closeout game, but I just think he's a guy that would plug a lot of holes for them if the three-point shooting comes online a little bit more.
We've got Spencer Percy here in the Green Room app. He could not make it to this recording.
Hey, yes.
Spencer, real quick, we're wrapping up here.
Hey, what's up?
What are your thoughts on the Lowry marketing and stuff?
Well, first of all, yeah, Green Room's awesome. I mean, I just got back, saw you guys are still recording, hopped in. I was just trying to listen, Richie, and you looped me right in. to be honest with you, I haven't really had a chance to digest it too much. I don't love it. I think we talked about marketing the other day, me, you, and Lee. Great shooter. I think an okay fit with LaMelo Ball. Actually, probably a little bit better of a fit than I'm giving it credit for. But, he's one of those guys that, like, what else is he giving me other than the shooting? Now, he's 25 years old. That's fine. My wife's telling me to don't be too loud. I don't want to wake you get up here.
Spencer, so just can't stay away.
We're fired up from about Lowry marketing, man. We're fired up.
But seriously, I really don't know. Like, I don't know what else I'm getting from him as a player other than his shooting. But that being said, let's wait on the price point. Let's see where the contract comes in. Let's see how long it goes out. I don't think the Hornets – here's what I'll say, Richie. I don't think the Hornets, I don't think Mitch Kupchak is going to sign any contract that runs beyond LaMelo Ball or even all the way up to LaMelo Ball's extension eligible year. So I think that's the important factor to remember, is that there's a lot of flexibility in the roster building mechanics of this team right now. And so from that standpoint – I'm willing to say, let's see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
So sounds very similar to what we said. So you didn't add much there, Spencer. I'm just kidding.
No, that was Spencer having his Willis Reed moment coming in to handle a little bit of marketing conversation. To Spencer's point too, even if you signed, again, I'm not like pro marketing signing. It certainly depends on what the years and numbers look like. But even if you sign marketing to 13, 14 a year, like it's as long as, like, you know, assuming they would move Rozier or not bring him back or whatever, Charlotte's still going to be fine with cap. They're still going to be like loose and have liquid going forward with cap space into 2022. So it's not like it's going to be like a boat anchor for this team or whatever. Even if it's, I don't think, the most creative use of that cap space either. And there's some opportunity cost because of that.
All right. Well, we've run out of time. I actually guesstimated 30 minutes for this. It's ending up being like 50, 55 minutes. So that's the way that it always works here on BuzzBeat. Appreciate everyone in Green Room right now for staying tuned. We were hoping for a speaker, but I guess we did get a guest speaker here with Spencer. Summer League is around the corner. 4 games for Charlotte, Portland, Sacramento, San Antonio, Toronto. I'm hoping maybe we can do like a post-game pod where we just overreact to summer league play. Yeah, we'll do that here on Green Room as well. So we will see you guys. For Brian, for Lee, for Spencer who joined us, I'm Richie. Have a good one.